理课堂听 class.com。
College English Test, Band 4.
Model Test 8.
Part 3. Listening Comprehension.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations.At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer.Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11. It was such a heavy fog day yesterday, and today it's such a fine day. Why don't we climb a mountain?
Oh, I would love to, Susan, but I've been sick for a few days, and all that exercise may not be good for me, I'm afraid.
What does the man mean? Question 12.Why didn't you make an appointment to see Dr. Henderson last week when you first twisted your foot?
The injury didn't seem very serious then. I decided to come today because my foot still hurts when I put my weight on it.
Why didn't the man see Dr. Henderson earlier?
Question 13. Jane, what would you do if you were on vacation overseas and lost all your money and credit cards?
Well, I guess I'd probably sell my watch and camera, or I might get a job as a waitress somewhere till I made enough money to buy a plane ticket to return home.
What are they talking about?Question 14. Look at those colorful birds over there. I think you can teach them to talk.
Yes, but look at the price tag on them. Frankly, I'd rather have a cat for 25.
Where does the conversation most probably take place?
Question 15. I have been waiting here for almost half an hour. Why did you take so long to park the car?
I'm sorry, dear. I had driven 3 blocks before I spotted a place to park.
What do we learn from the conversation?Question 16. I spend hours going over the French lessons in my spare time, but I don't seem to be able to carry on a decent conversation in French.
You should take some private lessons from the new Belgium student. You'd surely make progress then.
What does the man advise the woman to do? Question 17. What do you think of your new apartment?
Well, it's quite nice, really. Although I would have a hard time getting used to living in such a big place.
What's the man's problem?
Question 18. Mary, would you like to go to the movies with me after dinner?
Well, I'll go if you really want me to, but I'm rather tired.
What can we conclude from this conversation?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Hello?
Hello, Sam. This is Paula Hansen. Sorry to bother you, but I'm having a small problem I thought you might be able to help me with.
Sure, Paula. What is up?
Well, you know Sarah and I moved into an off-campus apartment in the fall. Over the west side of town.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, the dishwasher broke down, so we report it to Ms. Connors, the owner. She said she'd take care of it, but a month went by and nothing happened.
Did you get back in touch with her?
I got a repair person to give me an estimate. Then I sent it to her. When I didn't hear from her, I had the repair done. And I removed the cost from the rent check.
So, what is the problem?
She called here as a mad cow. She said she could have gotten the repair done for less money. Now she's threatening to drive us away for not paying the full rent.
Hold on, Paula. It does sound pretty serious. But I'm sure you can all sit down and work this out.
Well, you are over at the law school, so I wondered if you would mind coming with Sarah and me when we go to talk to Miss Connors. We're supposed to meet with her tomorrow night at 8.
Sure. I haven't studied a lot about contracts yet, but I'd be glad to help you straighten things out. Why don't I stop by at about 17:30?
Thanks, Sam. You are a lifesaver.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. Why is Paula unhappy? Question 20. Why is Ms. Connor angry? Question 21. What is the relationship between Paula and Sam? Question 22. Why does Paula think Sam could help her?
Conversation 2.
Good morning. I'm doing a survey for the Department of Health and Social Security. And I'd like to ask you a few questions, if I may.
I suppose that'd be okay.
The first question is, what is your full name?
Louisa O'Leary.
And your age, Mrs. O'Leary?
Well, it's 34.
Really? You don't look it at all. Now, how much does your husband earn?
That's a personal question, but I suppose I should try and be as frank as I can with you. £10,000 a year.
That isn't much.
Yes.
Now, what I'm really interested in is the way you spend your money. What about housing, for example?
Well, our house costs us about, £300 a month.
Oh, that must be difficult with $10,000 a year.
It certainly is. I was working before we had the baby, of course. That used to make things a lot easier. Now we're much less well off.
Apart from the house, where does your money go?
Food is the biggest item. That's about £240 a month for food and other small bits and pieces, cleaning materials and so on. For electricity, we only use it for lighting. That's about £50 a year. Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 23. What's the man doing? Question 24. Where does this conversation probably take place? Question 25. Why isn't the family as rich as it used to?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1.
The first reality TV show in the world was called Expedition Robinson, and it was shown in Sweden in 1997. Half the population of the country watched the final event, and a new kind of TV program was born. 2 years later in Holland, the first series of Big Brother was filmed. Again, it was a great success, and the final program was watched by 15 million people. Now, more than 20 countries around the world have Big Brother or Expedition Robinson on their TV screens. The ordinary people who take part in the programs are known by millions of people in their own countries, and reality TV has become big, big business. For the TV producers, reality TV is a dream which come true because many of the programs cost nothing to make. At some point, the television viewers are asked to telephone the program to vote or to apply to take part in the show. It is the cost of these telephone calls that pays for the shows. One of the most popular shows is Pop Idol. In the show, a group of attractive young people are made into pop stars. TV viewers vote for their favorite person on the show. The winner makes a record and millions of copies of the record are sold. His or her pictures are published on the covers of magazines or on the front pages of newspapers, and then they are quickly forgotten. But not everyone is happy about reality TV. In Portugal, two TV channels got into trouble because they showed too much of the personal lives of the people in the shows. In France, reality TV is called rubbish TV. and the TV studios of Big Brother were attacked 3 times in 1 week. In Greece, Big Brother was described as against human rights and civilization.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. Who usually takes part in the reality TV shows? Question 27. Who would pay for the cost of the reality TV shows, according to the passage? Question 28. What can be concluded from the passage?
Passage 2.
Some people argue that the pressure on international sportsmen and sportswomen kills the essence of sport. The pursuit of personal excellence. Children kick a football around for fun. When they get older and play for local school teams, they become competitive, but still enjoy playing. The individual representing his country cannot afford to think about enjoying himself. He has to think only about winning. He is responsible for an entire nation's hopes, dreams, and reputation. A good example is the Football World Cup. Football is the world's most important sport. Winning the World Cup is perhaps the summit of international sporting success. Mention Brazil to someone, and the chances are that he'll think of football. In a sense, winning the World Cup put Brazil on the map. Sports fans and supporters get quite irrational about the World Cup. People in England felt that their country was somehow important after they won in 1966. Last year, thousands of Scots sold their cars and even their houses and spent all their money travelling to Brazil. Who won the World Cup?
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. According to the speaker, what is the most important thing about sport? Question 30. Why did thousands of Scots spend all their money traveling to Brazil? Question 31. What is the speaker's main purpose in the talk?
Passage 3.
On June 17th, 1744, the officials from Maryland and Virginia held a talk with the Indians of the Six Nations. The Indians were invited to send boys to William and Mary College. In a letter the next day, they refused the offer as follows. "We know that you have a high opinion of the kind of learning taught in your colleges, and that the costs of living of our young men while with you would be very expensive to you. We are convinced that you mean to do us good by your proposal, and we thank you heartily. But you must know that different nations have different ways of looking at things, and you will therefore not be offended if our ideas of this kind of education happen not to be the same as yours. We have had some experience of it. Several of our young people were formerly brought up at the colleges of the northern provinces. They were taught all your sciences. But when they came back to us, they were bad runners, ignorant of every means of living in the words. They were totally good for nothing. We are, however, not the less obliged by your kind offer, though we refuse to accept it, and to show our grateful sense of it. If the gentlemen of Virginia will send us a dozen of their sons, we will take care of their education, teach them in all we know, and make men of them.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 32. What is the passage mainly about? Question 33. What seems to be the Indian's chief purpose in writing the letter? Question 34. What did the Indians believe according to the letter? Question 35. Why did the Indians think that they were different from the officials' view of education?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
We generally view the family as being one of our most stable institutions. Yet our family system has undergone a number of changes in the past. 200 years ago, marriages were often arranged by parents, with economic considerations being the most important factor of who married whom. 200 years ago, divorce was rare. Now, more than 1 out of 3 marriages are in divorce. 200 years ago, women did not work out of the home, and children were an economic asset. Now, nearly 50% of married women work outside the home, and children are a financial responsibility. In our fast-paced society, the family is now changing even more rapidly than it did in the past. In viewing the future of the American family, some authorities foresee the family as racing toward extinction. They say that the family is dead except for the first year or two of child raising, and that this will be its only function. Family optimists, on the other hand, predict the family's entering a golden age, an era where the members will have more leisure time to spend with each other and will derive considerable enjoyment from family-type activities. Most sociologists, however, do not agree with either the pessimists or the optimists. Instead, they argue that the family is experimenting with a number of novel types and forms, many of which will probably be thrown away, but some likely to be found satisfying and functional, and gradually becoming typical.
Now the passage will be read again.
We generally view the family as being one of our most stable institutions, yet our family system has undergone a number of changes in the past. 200 years ago, marriages were often arranged by parents, with economic considerations being the most important factor of who married whom. 200 years ago, divorce was rare. Now, more than 1 out of 3 marriages are in divorce. 200 years ago, women did not work out of the home, and children were an economic asset. Now, nearly 50% of married women work outside the home, and children are a financial responsibility. In our fast-paced society, the family is now changing even more rapidly than it did in the past. In viewing the future of the American family, some authorities foresee the family as racing toward extinction. They say that the family is dead, except for the first year or two of child raising. And this will be its only function. Family optimists, on the other hand, predict the families entering a golden age, an era where the members will have more leisure time to spend with each other and will derive considerable enjoyment from family-type activities. Most sociologists, however, do not agree with either the pessimists or the optimists. Instead, they argue that the family is experimenting with a number of novel types and forms. many of which will probably be thrown away. But some likely to be found satisfying and functional and gradually becoming typical.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
We generally view the family as being one of our most stable institutions. Yet our family system has undergone a number of changes in the past. 200 years ago, marriages were often arranged by parents, with economic considerations being the most important factor of who married whom. 200 years ago, divorce was rare. Now, more than 1 out of 3 marriages are in divorce. 200 years ago, women did not work out of the home, and children were an economic asset. Now, nearly 50% of married women work outside the home, and children are a financial responsibility. In our fast-paced society, the family is now changing even more rapidly than it did in the past. In viewing the future of the American family, some authorities foresee the family as racing toward extinction. They say that the family is dead except for the first year or two of child raising, and that this will be its only function. Family optimists, on the other hand, predict the family's entering a golden age, an era where the members will have more leisure time to spend with each other and will derive considerable enjoyment from family-type activities. Most sociologists, however, do not agree with either the pessimists or the optimists. Instead, they argue that the family is experimenting with a number of novel types and forms, many of which will probably be thrown away, but some likely to be found satisfying and functional, and gradually becoming typical.